This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. Femi Ebebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. I'm filling in for Stormy, who is enjoying some much-needed rest and relaxation. Michael, how are we doing here on this Thursday morning, or morning on the West Coast, afternoon for you guys out east?
Well, Stormy's cruising the Alaskan seas, I think. She's having a good old time, so good for her. She deserves it, but I'm good. You know, when the NBA started at 8 o'clock last night, got to watch the Knicks game. Mm-hmm. You know, got to hear a lot of complaining afterwards. What side were you on? I was on the wrong side of that one, Femi. I really thought that they would be able to reduce the numbers in the game. Right? The Knicks' mm-hmm. three-point shooting percentage, their two-point shooting percentage, and find a way to win, and I thought Halliburton would play better. Well, as Meatloaf said, two out of three ain't bad, but they ain't going to make you any money. And, you know, I mean, the Pacers are sitting there after the game. They shoot 51% from the floor. They shoot 44 from threes, and they lose by nine.
Incredible.
Did you think it was like an NBA All-Star game out there last night? I mean, it looked like nobody – was anybody playing defense?
Welcome to Indiana Pacers basketball. That's how they play. They're up and down. They want to let you score so they can get the ball back quicker. And that's how they play basketball. And it's worked for them up until this point, but now they find themselves in this 0-2 hole. And, I mean, the Knicks were losing guys left and right. I mean, Brunson left the game for a little bit. He ended up coming back in the second half. OG Anunoby, who – it was the OG Anunoby game until he got hurt, and now he has his hamstring injury, which is not looking too good as we turn our attention to game three. But now for the New York Knicks, I don't think they're going to lose at MSG. There's just something about that building and how they feed off of the crowd, despite having limited bodies, despite being exhausted. Josh Hart did another 48-minute performance last night, and he was terrific in the game. They just feed off of that crowd to where it's such an elite home court advantage. You're going to have to put together one heck of an effort to beat them in the Garden.
Well, you're going to have to play some defense, Femi. I mean, that also would be a nice start. I mean, you know, that would be pretty good, right? And look, you know, they're getting open threes. DiVincenzo's shooting above his league average for threes. I mean, it's been rather, you know, you're going to have a little bit of resistance to the game, and you're going to have to dig down the physicality. I get that. And, you know, complaining about the calls. Mm. I mean, Carlisle sent 78 instances to the league office of incorrect calls or non-calls. Like, that, you just wasted 3 hours of somebody's time, right? Because you got to clip those things out, send it to the league, and they're going to either say, oh, we're sorry, or they're going to say you're right. Like, what do you get out of it? Well, what are you getting out of it?
Maybe he thinks that he can influence how game three will be officiated Friday night. Maybe that's the thought process behind putting these clips together. I mean,
where do they bring in our man Scott? What do they bring him in, you know?
The extender will come out.
The extender. Where do they bring his ass in there? Yeah, he'll be calling stuff we never see before.
Although he might be in Minnesota,
like,
I don't
get it.
Yeah, the extender is going to be in Minnesota or in Indianapolis. One of the two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we got Harry's talking about, you know, they want the Knicks to win. Carlisle then, he must have stole this from Harry. Harry, you know, from yesterday's show, Harry was talking about, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. They want the big markets in the game. You know, and Carlisle's echoing the same line. I mean, he's plagiarizing Harry from our show.
Well, if it's been a conspiracy theory for the New York Knicks, it's been a really bad one since they haven't done anything worth a damn in about 40 years. So I don't know what's going on with the conspiracy there. But I do want to get to that Carlisle soundbite, but let's go ahead and set the table for what we have coming up on the show for the next couple of hours. Joining us in less than 15 minutes, you see here all across the DraftKings network and on Golic and Gojo weekdays at 8 to 10 Eastern time. The one and only Claudia Bellafato will be joining us here, host and betting analyst for us at DraftKings. We'll talk some Boston Celtics. They've been cruising. Do they cruise once again in game two against the Cleveland Cavaliers? And how about our Boston Bruins went ahead and they took home ice. They took it on the chin a little bit yesterday, but they took home ice going back to Boston for game four against the Florida Panthers. Then in 30 minutes from now, Mike Somich, host of The Handle, will join us. So Somich always has some plays on the hardwood, on the ice. And we'll ask Somich, Is Mystic Dan going to run in the Preakness in a couple of weeks here? That's been the talk of the world in the horse world here. So about Mystic Dan, we'll go ahead and get that skinny from Mike Somage in about a half hour. Then in hour number two, our guy Mike Palm, the VP of operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino, also co-host of mine for Live Bet Saturdays. He will join us for Palm's Pressing 3 in hour number two. But let's talk about Rick Carlisle and what he had to say after the game, because that's what a lot of Pacer fans were talking about. The officiating, once again, there was a problem with the moving screen in game one. In game two, they go ahead and take away the false double dribble call on Isaiah Hartenstein. Well, here's what Rick Carlisle had to say after the game, after their game two loss, 131-21 to the New York Knicks.
You know, you I'm always talking to our guys about not making it about the officials. But, you know, we deserve a fair shot, you know, and it just, there's not a consistent balance, and that's disappointing. You know, small market teams deserve an equal shot. They deserve a fair shot. No matter where they're playing.
This guy's making it sound like they're a 16 seed going against the one seed. Small market teams, Michael. They need a fair shot in that.
I mean, they're
against
not the
big
Paul.
Coastal elites in New York.
I mean, they make it sound like they're DePaul or something. Like, okay, you know, seriously. Look, I mean, let me ask you this question. Like, you've watched NBA your whole life. When has the game ever been officiated correctly?
Never.
Like, when have you ever sat there and said, man, they really got it? You know, they put in review systems. They can't even get that right, you know. And so I just think, to me, if you're telling your team to disregard the officials, then why are you talking about it? You got to play through it. You're just going to have to play through it. Do I disagree with them? No, not at all. It seems like they're but I mean, Tyrese Maxey went down the lane a zillion times. He couldn't get a call. Mm-hmm. He couldn't get the crap beat out of him. I'm sure he's still bruised today, you know, but he couldn't get a call. It's just the way it is. I don't think, and I'm a conspiracy guy. Look, there's no way Lee was on the sixth floor. I'm all on that, right? But I just think it's how they call the game. It's what they let play. You know, it's what they kind of go in that with that meeting that they have before the game. Okay, we can't let them get away with this. They scout too. They know what team's better than the other.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's, if you're the Pacers, you're kind of having to scout the officiating crew as well, of saying, hey, they're going to let it be a little bit more physical, or it might be a little bit slanted, but that's part of home court advantage in the postseason. That's why the regular season matters, and you have to get home court advantage, because more often than not, I mean, human nature kicks in, and the officials are more likely to side with what's going on with the home crowd and the home team. But after the game, the players had a different tune than what Rick Carlisle said at the podium. So Tyrese Haliburton said this, quote, they outplayed us, so let's not pretend like the refs are the reason we lost. T.J. McConnell said, quote, we're not going to sit here and blame officials. We've got to be better. It's just that simple. They smashed us on the boards again tonight, plus just brought more energy than we did. So it sounds like the players, like whatever message he's saying internally, it's like, don't worry about the officials. That at least has resonated. And maybe this is, like I said, Carlisle trying to kind of set the groundwork for a game three, getting maybe a more friendly whistle at home in Indiana.
I don't know if that ever works, right? I mean, Al Davis spent his career trying to get a friendly whistle, you know, and look what it got him. The tuck game, look what it got him. It got him the immaculate reception. That's really worked out well. So, I mean, but I think Halliburton's right. I mean, the two players for the Knicks, Hartenstein and Hart, had 27 total rebounds in the game. Indianapolis only had 32 for a team. They got beat up on the boards. And look, the refs had not, there was only a five free throw differential.
Yep.
Indianapolis had 17 free throws. The Knicks had 22. So I get it, right? Maybe you're not getting the calls and you would have had more, but you know, the Pacers allowed 30 or more points in three of the quarters. And then they went, you know, they went in at halftime, and I think they got caught up with a lot of teams do. When a star player gets hurt, you have a tendency to want to let down. Oh, the guy's hurt. We got this game. Barkley with halftime yesterday was talking about it's a must-win for the Pacers if Brunson's out, right? Yeah. It's a must-win. Well, it was, but he wasn't out. So you got to raise your level. Like, if you're going to beat the Knicks, like the first 5 minutes of the second half, I thought to myself, the Pacers ain't winning this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they lost it in that. I mean, they were outscored in the third quarter 36-18. That's how dominant the New York Knicks were. When Brunson came back, the crowd got back into things. And Brunson, I mean, what more can we say about what he's been doing this postseason? 29 points. He was plus 26 in the box score. I mean, 11 of 18 after missing much of the second quarter. This guy, he's quickly climbing the rankings for popular New York Knicks of all time, because the crowd, when they just feed off of his energy, he feeds off of theirs, and that's what gets this whole thing rolling like a snowball, it feels like. And he's just been terrific, and I'm on record saying that I don't think they're going to lose a home game this postseason. Maybe they get beat in this series and something happens, or if they get beat and they play the Boston Celtics because they won't have home court advantage in that series. But in that building, the way that they've been playing and the way Brunson's playing, as long as they can at least stay a little bit healthier than what they've been staying, I think the Knicks have a really good chance to at least win their home games and protect home floor.
You know, last night, I don't think they have it at the Garden, but I know at the Wells Fargo here in Philly, I think you get a free chicken filet sandwich when a guy misses two free throws, right? Mm-hmm. I think they have some kind of, whether it's a Wendy's Frosty you get or whatever the hell it is, you know, you get something free if a guy misses two in a row. I mean, the Pacers had two guys miss two in a row. Jackson missed two in a row, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think Miles Turner missed two in a row. Like, they missed seven free throws. They were 10 for 17 from the three-throw line. They score those. Let's just say that, you know, now the game's within five. You know, they score. May say they go 15. The Knicks were 81% from the line.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much to think. I wonder, I laughed. When Alex Burke went in there for the first 1 minute and he dribbled for about 20 seconds and then launched a three, that was the last time we'll see him. We'll never see him again. He's in witness protection. Thibodeau's going to say, like, you ain't doing that crap.
Alex Burke's on the lam for the New York Knicks. The guys, he took the last shot of the quarter in the second quarter. It's like, oh, buddy, where are we going with this?
And then we never saw him again.
Never to be seen.
Yeah.
All right.
He could have gone to some restaurant for dinner after that.
Vescovia. Claudia Bellafato joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Well, when you log into the new VSiN.com app, one of the things that you'll see is an article from our very own Michael Lombardi on Seattle's sunny forecast. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. It's not sunny often, but Michael thinks the Seahawks might be flying a little under the radar with first-year head coach Mike McDonald. Make sure you check that out. We'll discuss it a little bit later on in the show today, but check out the article on VSiN.com as well as all the other gadgets and gizmos, betting splits, best bets, articles, you name it. It's on there, VSiN.com. Check it out today. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. And joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, our DraftKings Network teammate. You see her weekdays, 8 to 10 Eastern time on the Gojo and Go Look Show, the one and only Claudia Bellafato. Claudia, thanks for hanging out with us here this afternoon. How you doing? How are things going? We want to ask you about your Boston teams. Tonight's game, Celtics hosting the Cavaliers, game two. The C's, big favorites, 13.5, total 212. How you looking to bet this game?
Not laying that number. I don't like to chase those lines. What I like to do with these big spreads, just in fear of the backdoor cover, sometimes look to the first half, don't really want to lay 8.5 either. So I look to the team total, which is also pushed up, of course, to 113 in the hook. But guys, they put up 120, and Tatum shot awful, just 18 points. And I think what we're seeing from the Derek Whites and the Peyton Pritchards and the bench and Brown even, we're going to continue to see that. And I know that sounds strange. Well, the Cavs defense is going to show up again, right? Like they did all season. They looked confused. They looked gassed at this point. The reason they went through the Magic is because the Magic can't shoot. That's just not the case here. And I think the depth is huge. Them not having Jarrett Allen is huge. That takes away the boards. 14 rebounds, guys. He was averaging in those four games. He was healthy. 17 points a game. So for a bet on the game itself, I'd go Celtics team total. If you guys are looking for prop, Evan Mobley, he's stepped up big with Allen out. Allen wasn't at shoot around. Doesn't look like he'll be playing. 10.5 rebounds, I think, is a very safe number. He's averaging around 11 without him there. I looked at combo maybe for him, points plus rebounds. He's going to have to step up if they can somehow cover this 13.5, but I would stay away from that spread, guys.
And so they lose today, Claudia. They lose Charles Lee, their lead assistant, number one guy, to the Charlotte Hornets, and he walks into really literally a hornet's nest down there with new ownership and a team kind of out of sorts. How do you think that will affect the Celtics moving forward?
I don't know if it will much. We sort of talked about it today. The way that the team is built right now, I call it sort of monotone, which that's not meant to be a bad thing, but they just sort of have their sights set. They know their roles. They know how good they can be, and they just sort of stay at that level. So I don't see too many things that happen, whether it's inside or out, affecting their mindset too much. When it comes to this situation, at least this series, when they get past it, maybe it changes a little bit. But for this one, I don't think it'll affect them too much.
Yeah, going to be the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets is Charles Lee. We're hanging out with Claudia Bellafato here on the Progressive Guest Line. Check her out 8 to 10 Eastern Time weekdays on Gojo and Golic here on the DraftKings Network. Well, Claudia, how about tonight's game in Oklahoma City? The Mavericks facing an 0-1 deficit. OKC looked terrific, especially in the second half of game number one. Well, they're now laying 5, total 218. What do you make of Luka Doncic in this matchup? Because everyone's talking about how Lu Dort is making him work. Do you think that happens again tonight?
Yeah, it pains me, especially because I am a Luka stan. I've been saying with this MVP race that he deserves to be at the very top. 4 votes is criminal when you saw what he was able to do if we're talking stats. However, I do lean under on his point total, 30 and at the hook. You talked about the defense, which does play into this because OKC has been absolutely electric. No team has gotten over 95 points, which is also why I lean under on this Mavs team total. But the issue with Luka is we already know that, you know, cardio is not really his thing. He's not the most super in shape guy. So when you do have a knee injury, specifically, that's going to slow you down. That's going to hurt you. And the worst part is he's been vocal about it. That's when you know it's really hurting and ailing a player. And that's the biggest concern for me. This Dallas team, I'm sure Dallas fans were very excited when they saw that Kyrie was coming. They got excited when Kyrie actually showed up in the postseason. He's been huge. But the team just relies way too much on them. Combined, they're scoring 52% of the team's points in the postseason. So when one of them falls off, which we saw with Kyrie, didn't show up much, you know, in the second half of the regular season. Now in the postseason, if Luka's not showing up, they're going to really hurt. So if you're looking for a play, I would look under on Luka, lean under on Luka, under on this team total, 106 in the hook. They're just not winning anywhere, not in the paint. They're being out-rebounded, and they're not making their shots.
So the Bruins had the great win and advanced to go play the Florida Panthers, and they had this huge letdown, lose 6-1. Is there anything you like in this series in terms of betting the Bruins? Because you're in the city of champions, essentially. The Bruins are good. You know, the Celtics are on fire. So is there anything you like in this hockey area that Femi can run down to the book and play? Because he's desperate to play something today.
The ebbs and flows of hockey, baby. I love it. Everybody just got so worked up about that game one when the Bruins won 5-1. And I said, everybody settle down because we know how this works. There's going to be a swing. And that's exactly what we saw. The Achilles heel for the Bruins is when they just don't get shots on net. That has been the reason that they don't win games. They have the talent, they have the depth, they definitely have the goaltending, but goaltending can only go so far if you're not putting shots on puck. Obviously, they're not going to go in. Bobrovsky, as we saw last season, there are some holes to his game. They need to expose that. So I would say wherever you can get the Bruins, whether it is pregame at plus money, in-game, I like to bet this team a lot too. Maybe not so much in that last game because they didn't look great from the start, specifically with the volume of shots on net. But say we go into this game 3 and the shots are there, they're just not necessarily going in so far. They go behind one, you get them at plus money. I think there's great value there. I would just say with this team, you can get them at plus 950 right now. Last time I checked the DraftKings odds, that's a good flyer. A little bit of sprinkle, a little beer money play. The team has what it needs to get there, especially in the goalie tandem. If it's not Sway, it's Allmark. As we saw, they took out Sway in that last game. And everybody's sort of mad about Montgomery's choice to do that. I don't think that's terrible. Give them a breather. They didn't look good in that game. Make them fresh for game 3.
Well, I think the real question here, Claudia, is that what are people in Boston saying about the Tkachuk and Pasternak fight last night? I mean, that was something for the ages. You don't see that in the postseason too often.
Oh, the best too, you saw the video, was actually kind of controversial because Pasta went over to Montgomery and it looked like he was saying, can I go? And then he goes, drops the gloves. Unfortunately, I think we need him to get some lessons from Marchand or, some of the old guys of the past who are known as fighters, because he's clearly not. Most people probably watched that and said, just stick to scoring because you're not a great fighter, which is fine. So Tkachuk definitely won that. And then after the game, they asked Montgomery, and of course he said, no, I didn't say that. But it was cool to hear both head coaches watch and say, I'm fine with that. You know, these guys have so much passion. These two teams don't love each other, so it's good to sort of see them bring this in. I just wish Pasta got, like, at least two hooks landed. Yeah. But, that was kind of bad.
All right, everybody loves the Patriots draft. Where are you on the draft, and do you think they can go on their over total this year in terms of wins? With Brissett, we think he's going to be the starter. You would play that, and obviously Drake May would redshirt. But what's your overall view of this of the Patriots and as it relates to their win total?
Well, Michael, if you remember last year, I said under. That was easy for me, and we saw that go way down during the season. Four in the hook, juice crazy to the over. I don't really want to drink the juice. If you shop around, you can find a better price at five in the hook at plus money. They have to be better. I don't see how they could not be better. When it comes to this new regime, too, I don't understand the comparisons with Mac Jones and Drake May. And Michael, I'll be joining you Monday. We can really dive into this. But this new regime did what everybody wanted them to, right? They got the quarterback. They got a receiver. May not be number one. At least he wasn't at Washington. But we'll see what happens with this fit. And you got some protection. Still don't really have that left tackle, which is an issue. But I think in terms of the draft, they did the right things. They checked off the boxes. It's just a matter of how it all comes together. Don't love what they did in the offseason in terms of going out to get guys like Calvin Ridley, who maybe it sounds like he just didn't want to be there. So in terms of the draft itself, I think they did the right thing. I do lean over. I think they get five or more. The AFC East is not as good as it was last year. So it's going to be interesting to watch this team. It's a game-to-game, week-to-week for me for sure, but I do see five or more for them.
Yeah, 4.5. I mean, when was the last time the Patriots win total was that low there? For what it's worth, Jerod Mayo right now is 22-1 to be coach of the year. If they are able to make the playoffs or do something like that, Jerod Mayo would probably be up there for the coach of the year candidates. Claudia mentioned it. She will be hosting the Lombardi Line with Michael on Monday. So the two of you, I'm sure, will get more time to talk some more New England Patriots discussion and what the Patriots offseason will look like as we approach the schedule release next week. But Claudia, we thank you for the time. Once again, we encourage everybody to check out Gojo and Golic 8-10 Eastern time here on the DraftKings Network. Until then, Claudia, be well. Go Celtics, go Bruins, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Claudia.
See you guys.
Awesome stuff there from Claudia Bellafato joining us on the Progressive Guest.
You're taking off Monday, I see, Femi. I see you're taking off Monday. Where are you headed?
I'm not going anywhere. We're shuffling on Monday, buddy. I'm not in control of personnel decisions around here. Mike Somas joins us next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, for a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally priced at $240, you can now grab it for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. We're talking about 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code Lombardi. That's the most important part, promo code Lombardi. So you're going to get all the VSiN daily best bets, the 19 hours of live programming, the betting splits, the betting systems, everything your heart could desire to make you a better today. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. Once again, promo code Lombardi. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here, presented by DraftKings. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Claudia Bellafato for joining us in the last segment. Claudia will be with Michael on Monday, hosting the Lombardi Line. So once again, a lot of Pats talk, some Bruins
take it
talk,
off, Femi. Some Celtics take it talk. Off. That's it. Take your day off. There you go. Yeah, I mean, well, you're newlywed. You got to take all that time off. Yeah, you're newlywed.
Happy,
yeah,
happy life, happy life. You know, that's
a lot of recovery. A lot of recovery. I get it.
We're still recovering. But joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, it's our buddy, host of The Handle. Check it out on the weekends. Our buddy Mike Somich here joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Mike, we appreciate you taking time out of this morning to hang with us here. Before we get into your hockey plays, your basketball plays, let's do a little bit of a, I guess, autopsy of what we saw at the Kentucky Derby and what might happen in 9 days at the Preakness Stakes. Of course, Mystic Dan, the winner at Churchill Downs. Is Mystic Dan going to run at the Preakness? Are we going to get another maid situation here? What's the latest here on Mystic Dan's status for a couple of weeks from now?
Well, you got to kind of read between the tea leaves here. Kenny McPeak came out of the race, the trainer Mystic Dan, and said that, you know, he wanted to make sure the horse was doing okay. And it's a tall task to run a mile and a quarter and wheel around in 2 weeks, especially when you have some pretty big horses that are waiting for you there in Baltimore to take you on in the Preakness. At this point, I would be very surprised if Mystic Dan does not run in the Preakness. It sounds like he is planning on doing it. He worked out well, galloped out well over the track there at Churchill this week. So I think we're going to see Mystic Dan in the Preakness. And I hope he gets bet. I'm looking forward to play against him in that spot. I thought you had to give all the credit in the world to Brian Hernandez Jr., the jockey of Mystic Dan. When you go back, you watch the replay of the race, did a great job getting the horse out of the gate. It was absolutely gutsy going through on the rail there, actually had to throw out his boots after the race because he scraped them up against the rail, and then to send the horse as soon as he got through it and say, hey, come and catch me if you can, was the difference of the race. So you got to give credit to Brian Hernandez Jr., but the Preakness is going to be fun. We know Muth is waiting, the big horse from Bob Baffert, and we just found out that Tuscan Gold will be there as well. He scratched out of the Peter Pan this weekend for Chad Brown to run into the Preakness.
Mike, you know, having watched not as many horse races as you have, is it common for a jockey to reach and grab the harness of another horse like we saw at the finish in the Derby? And, you know, do they get fined for that, suspended? Is there any repercussions, or are they like Adam Silver and just going to wait until next year?
It is not common at all, Michael. And that was one of those situations where going into the race, you knew Sierra Leone loved to lug in. If you go back, you watch the Bluegrass, he came in six paths in that race as well. And he might have cost Forever Young that race. He bumped him 3-4 times down the stretch and really shifted his hindquarters, which is where a horse gets all their propel from. So he affected Forever Young quite a bit there. The grab happened right at the wire, Michael. And so they did talk to him. The stewards talked to him. They did not suspend him for it. He may get fined. He was saying that he was using it for his balance because he just could not get Sierra Leone to run straight down the stretch. And if you watch it, he kept pulling his opposite hand out with the rein, trying to get the horse to straighten out. And look, he just doesn't like to straighten out when he gets room on the inside. And that was obviously a big part of this. That specific kind of grab or touch, I can't really tell which it was, happened right at the wire. And so I don't believe there's going to be any disciplinary action on it.
Wow, apparently you can just grab the harness. You can throw a heat pack onto the court. You can do whatever you want these days. What happened to order here in May? We're hanging out
grab
with
a guy's leg. Tackle a guy. Yeah, tackle a guy's leg. No exactly. Worries.
Just,
no problem.
No hip drop tackles.
Worldwide wrestling
though.
Comes to horse racing.
Yeah, no hip drop.
Yeah, WWE.
Yeah, no hip drop tackles. We make sure that we can't do that. That's where we draw a line. Hanging out with Mike Somich on the Progressive Guest Line. Mike, of course, co-host of The Handle, which you can check out noon to 3 Eastern time on the weekends with our buddy Matt Brown here. Well, let's turn our attention to the NBA here, Mike, as we encourage everybody to head to the DK Horse app if you're going to go ahead and bet the Preakness. In the NBA, the Boston Celtics are a 13.5-point favorite. The total is at 212 here for Game 2. The market's saying that this is not going to be a contest. It wasn't a contest in Game 1. How do you see it playing out tonight?
I'm guessing it won't be a contest either, but this number leaked up. It was 12.5 this morning. Now we're seeing it at 13.5. I just don't have an interest in playing the spread at that big of a number. I looked at the Celts -8 in the first half. That went out to 8.5. I do, if I was going to play a side or total here or a side here, I would play the Celtics -8 in the first half or 8.5 now on the line. But I'm looking toward the under here. To me, this is a game where the 212 number, it's the same number that we saw in Game 1. We saw a first quarter that had 74 points in it. The total in game was 226.5 at that point. It actually got all the way down to about 214, 215 midway through the third quarter. I just don't see another first quarter where you see the Celtics play such lackluster defense and allow Cleveland to be able to shoot the lights out. And I don't think the Celtics really want to play with that fast a pace, especially if they have a lead. I think they're going to be able to take care of Cleveland here again. And I like the under in this spot. So I played under 212 in this game.
I know you don't have a bet on it yet, but watching the Pacers Knicks two games, what's your inclination moving forward? Do you think this goes 6? Do you think it goes 7? Do you think the Pacers can win 4 of the next 5? Or do you think this is all New York?
Well, I sure hope it's all New York. I played New York minus a game and a half for the series, minus 125 before it started. Bet the Knicks in game two there. Look, this Pacers team, they just don't defend. And that's a huge problem when you get to the playoffs. The Knicks are able to get whatever they want on the inside. They're able to get offensive rebounds, second chance opportunities. And I, you know, every time I try and get excited about this Pacers team, I just flash back to that Bucks series. No Giannis, no Lillard. And they still can't get the job done. So I just don't trust the Pacers to be able to consistently defend. I'm surprised we've seen this big of a flip when we go from home court, where the Knicks were laying 4.5 in game two, laying 6 in game one. And now the Pacers are laying 7.5. I'm going to sit. I'm going to wait. And I'm going to take the Knicks +8, +8.5, +9 if it goes up that high, because I still like the Knicks in this series. I think they're the better team. And I know they're banged up. That's the one big concern with New York here, is the minutes their starters have logged. I think game four, probably the better spot to play the Knicks, especially if you're getting somewhere in that 7-8 range. Game three could be a little bit tough. We saw in the opening round series against the 76ers, the Knicks played very well in game one, game two, go back to Philadelphia. And that was just a great spot for Philadelphia to be able to take care of business. This is another great spot for the Pacers. So I'll see how high this floats. If we get to that 8.5, 9 point, I'll probably have a Knicks ticket. But I am interested in the Knicks in game three, especially if we're catching somewhere in that 7 range.
Yeah, that number might float up if we
don't. You think this line is, Femi, hold on one second. Don't you think this line's reflective of the uncertainty of Ogunobi playing and Brunson's injury? Because it's completely out of whack, right?
Yeah, this is an injury inflated line, right? We don't know if OG Anunoby is going to be in the game. We're not sure about Brunson's foot. This is just a Knicks team that they don't play a lot of people. And so when you lose someone in the starting lineup, all of a sudden you're having to deal with, okay, who's going to come in? Who's going to take those minutes? And they're just not very deep. And so it puts more pressure on Brunson. It puts more pressure on Anunoby. And when they're the guys who are hurt, you got to be concerned about it. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing this float up. It'll be interesting when we get injury updates on those guys. If we do think it's possible that they're going to play, what happens with this line? And again, the spot's great for the Pacers here, right? They're down 0-2. They're headed home. They feel like they were competitive, and they were competitive in both of those game one and game two efforts. So I would expect you're going to keep seeing Pacers money come in unless we get a lot of positive injury news for the Knicks. But again, game four to me is where you want to be on the Knicks. I think we go back to New York 3-1.
Yeah, it's a less than 48-hour turnaround for the Pacers and the Knicks. Game three Friday night over in Indianapolis here. Let's turn our attention to the ice. We got about a couple minutes left here. The Carolina Hurricanes return home down 0-2. Rangers get in game one and game two the thriller in double overtime. Carolina now -165 on the money line there. You can get the Rangers +140, total 5.5. But you're looking to play this in a more unique way. They're identifying some of these props for the Hurricanes.
Yeah, I look, people don't talk about home ice advantage in the NHL enough when they're talking specifically about the line matchup. So in the NHL, the home team gets to put out their line second anytime there's a faceoff. So the offensive team or the road team has to kind of announce what they are doing. And for the Rangers, this is a huge advantage at home. They want to play faster than the Hurricane do. They want to get up and down the ice. Well, when you're at home, you can choose what matchup you want for your best offensive lines, your quickest lines. And that put Carolina in some interesting situations those first two games. Now Carolina gets to go home. They get to match up defensively. I think that's a big key here. So anytime the Rangers put their big guys on the ice, Carolina can respond with a defensive line, try and slow the pace of the game down. I think you're going to see less goals in Carolina than you did in New York because of that. So I played the first period under here, -115, under a goal and a half. And then look, Raleigh is a great hockey town. That building is going to be rocking tonight. And with the Canes coming in down 0-2, expect Carolina to be very good in the first 10 minutes of this game. Right now, you can get first to five shots as a prop on DraftKings. That's -125 for Carolina. I think they come out and they play some very, very good hockey early. I don't think we see many goals in the first period. I think we see less here in Carolina than we did in New York. So first period under, minus a goal and a half, and Carolina first to five shots, -125 for me tonight.
Real quick, in 10 seconds, who's going to win the Stanley Cup?
The winner of the Avs Stars series. Not sure who's going to win it, but the winner of that series is the best team. Florida looked great too last night.
Yeah, 6-1 against the Bruins. That was a really good, impressive performance there. He is Mike Somich. Once again, check him out. Co-host of The Handle, weekends, noon to 3 Eastern time. Mike, we appreciate the time. As always, good luck with the bets, man.
Thank you very much. Good luck, guys.
Appreciate you.
Good stuff. Mike Somich joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. We will continue our NFL Draft Division deep dive with the NFC West coming up next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. Mike Lombardi in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. Thank you to Mike Somit, who joined us in the last segment. If you missed it, make sure you search Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. Check it out in podcast form. All right, Michael, let's continue with the NFL draft division deep dives, these recaps. And today we have the NFC West, so Cardinals, Seahawks, Niners, and the Rams. And we'll start off with the Arizona Cardinals here, who had the fourth overall pick, Marvin Harrison Jr. out of Ohio State. They had two first-round picks, though. They had four third-round picks in this draft, as Monty Austin Ford, Jonathan Gannon wanted to use this as a draft to kind of build some depth on a roster that needs a lot of talent, and they appeared to do that, at least from a process standpoint.
Well, I mean, look, there's only one way to go for the Cardinals up, especially defensively, where they were, you know, inept at best last season. But the bigger issue than the draft for me, when you talk Arizona Cardinals and how these draft picks relate to the team, is, can Kyler Murray play well? Is he going to be the quarterback that he was in 2021, where he averaged 7.9 yards per attempt, or is he going to be back to the quarterback that we've seen the last 2 years, which is well below 7.0 yards per attempt? The concern you have to have if you're an Arizona Cardinal fan is, has the league caught up to Murray? Because when he first entered the league in 19 and then in 20, you know, what I called the beat plays, you know, where he was just running all over, making great plays, throwing it up the field, using his athleticism. But as time wore on and teams became smarter in how to defend him and then use his undersized nature against him, he became very difficult to throw the ball down the field. And I think we've seen that reflective in his numbers. 2 years ago, he hurts his knee, comes back. Last year in the 8 starts, I didn't think he looked very good at all through 10 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions. But this draft is all predicated, are they right about quarterback? You can say whatever you want moving forward. If they misjudge this and Michael Bidwell made them stick with Murray because he paid him, then this draft will end up being Marvin Harrison, and that's about it, right? But if he can return, then it becomes a different game.
Yeah, I mean, they made the bet on Kyler Murray. They put out the Kyler as our guy, and everybody kind of made fun of it because we all saw that Josh Rosen is our guy. Then they drafted Kyler Murray right after that. But this time they stuck to it. They stuck with Kyler Murray as their quarterback, and we'll see kind of how it goes. But they did bring a lot of guys around him. And Jonathan, I'm encouraged by what I saw in the second half of last year by the Cardinals and just like how hard they played and how like they were still locked into the season despite being well out of the playoff race. So maybe that's a good thing for Jonathan Gannon, who I know came in with a lot of question marks just because, I mean, socially, maybe he's a little bit awkward, or at least it appears that way. But apparently the players, it works for them. It works for them, I guess. And that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what we think. It matters what those 53 guys think, and they appear to like him as the head coach. The Seattle Seahawks, a team that you wrote about recently over on VSiN.com. We encourage everybody to check out that article. It goes really well in depth about how Michael is a little bit higher on the Seahawks than the market thinks right now at a win total of 7.5. But they kicked off their draft with Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle out of Texas, and they really addressed a lot of defense and offensive line, which is kind of where teams should be addressing the NFL draft, as John Schneider go ahead and controlling the draft without Pete Carroll for the first time.
Yeah, first time in 14 years he won't have Pete Carroll. And Pete, really, over the last 2 years, they've lost their home field advantage, Femi. You know, being there, covering the team, being a native, how much that home field meant to the city, meant to the team. And they're 20-13 over the last two seasons playing at home. I mean, the loss to Pittsburgh last year, where they allowed 400 yards, plus 400 yards, to Mason Rudolph, 200-plus passing, 200-plus rushing, and 30 points was a killer for Pete. Pete's not been able to get the defense fixed, you know, whether it's changed his scheme or whether it's kind of come up with a new scheme. And I think McDonald will answer that. You know, the thing that's fascinating when you study Baltimore last year, Baltimore struggled against teams like Cleveland that ran the football effectively against them. And they gave up yards in that area. And teams tried to run it. What teams didn't do against Baltimore last year was try to throw it. They were 31st last year, Baltimore, in facing passing attempts. And you say, well, they're 13-4. How could that be? They had a plus 42 point differential in the first half. Like, why aren't teams throwing the ball more? Well, because of the scheme of McDonald and how he was attacking the quarterback, creating turnovers, something that Pete's defense, which preached for 14 years, couldn't do in the last three games. They never gained a turnover in the last three games defensively. So they won nine games last year. They finished eighth in the seeding in the NFC. Okay? They're a much improved team. I think with all the Hall of Fame respect I can give Pete Carroll, they're going to be better on defense. They're going to be much better on defense. And last year, offensively, their tackles, their offensive line was beat up. I think there's a chance to get eight wins, nine wins. I think they can duplicate what they did last year. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but this team is built by Carroll's competitive nature, and that's not going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, John Schneider has been a part of that stuff. I think one thing that I thought was really interesting from the article, once again, I encourage everybody to check it out on VSiN.com, Michael's article on the Seattle Seahawks with the headline, Seattle's Sunny Forecast. But you talked about how you can trust John Schneider to continue to look for players when other teams aren't looking. That's the big Bill Walsh line. It's like, hey, like, we got to be looking when other people aren't looking. And that's during August, during the regular season. And it brings me back to when Schneider and Carroll first took over in 2010. That season, they made 284 roster transactions that first year, just overhauling the previous regime because, hey, they wanted guys that could fit what they felt was a true Seahawk. The year later, they had 218 more. That's a total of 502 player roster acquisitions and transactions in the first 2 years, which set them up for the Legion of Boom years that were to come in 2012 and beyond. So it's John Schneider's still there. So it's a good thing that's probably still going to happen.
And they had that great draft, right? And they built that defensive line, and they wanted home. They were hard to play up there, right? And so I'm going to assume that it's going to come back where they're going to be hard to play. And people will say to me, and I'm sure, you know, there is skepticism about Geno Smith and Sam Howell, and I agree, there is. They're going to be a little concerned about that. But Kenneth Walker's a really good player, and he wasn't 100%. They're a team that's built to try. They need to run the ball a little bit. I think they're going to be fundamentally sound. I think they're going to be really competitive. And look, you know, they're going to play a schedule where they play the NFC North. That'll be challenging, but they play the AFC East. They can win that. And then they have one of the teams from, I think, the South, the North, and AFC North, which I think will end up being Cincinnati. So I do like it because if they gain that home field back, and all of a sudden, you know, you play eight games at home and you win seven of them, you're going to get that over pretty quickly.
Yep. Now, a just deafening building that building was during its heyday and when they were winning divisions and they ultimately won the Super Bowl in 2013. How about the Los Angeles Rams, who for the first time since 2016 had a first round pick? They drafted Graham Barton, the center out of Duke, to continue to bolster that offensive line there. They went and addressed defense. Chris Braswell.
No, we got the wrong team.
Oh, the
we
wrong
got
one?
The wrong team here. Yeah, oh, this is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here.
Oh, that's the Buccaneers.
I guess
draft.
We
Sorry.
Decided a production to just give the Buccaneers that draft. But look, I think your points. They drafted two really good defensive linemen.
They did. Oh, yeah,
and
Jared
their offseason,
yeah.
Yep. They drafted. Yeah, and they drafted the Fisk kid from Florida State. They drafted two Florida State. Fisk was outstanding. I mean, only Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot could trade up for a guy who was third team all ACC and give away assets when Fisk is sitting on the board and everybody's trying to get to him, along with Newton from Illinois. So that goes into the Super Bowl winning franchise Falcons dossier here. But I mean, I think the Rams have really improved their team. And they're going to run the ball. They drafted Blake Corum. They're going to be an inside zone power team. I think it's, you know, Nacua is still. Yesterday when we were going through the props for receivers, I mean, they didn't even have Cooper Kupp up there on numbers. It was Puka Nacua. So you're talking about a team that has weapons. If Stafford stays healthy, I think this is a team that can really, really be a tough out. Now, the challenge is going to be, can Chris Shula replace Raheem Morris? And no one's going to replace. No one is going to replace Aaron Donald. No one.
Yeah, that can't be done. That guy's walking right to the Hall of Fame here in about 4 or 5 years. Finally, the 49ers, they started their draft with Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver out of Florida. They drafted a corner out of Florida State, Renardo Green, and they also addressed some other things as well. But the Niners, I think a lot of people were really focused on the wide receiver and Pearsall.
Well, I mean, Pearsall's going to come in and blend. And one thing when you play for San Francisco, you got to play inside and outside. And they got to stay healthy, right? And I think one of the things that challenge for San Francisco's team is to get that defensive line to play at the level that they need to play at to win games. And that was the disappointing thing. Teams ran the football on San Francisco. When you're an eight-man front and people are attacking you in the run game, you've got some issues. I think they're going to get better. I think the change to Sorensen will help them because he'll identify within the framework of their system.
All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, what's on Michael's mind? Also, No Way, No Doubt, and then Palms Pressing Three. You'll want to stick around for the back half of the show here. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN and the DraftKings Network.